from Trial Site News to play. So I'll do that and I'll look for the next piece while it's playing. This is about a potential lawsuit against the FDA in the States about misinformation that they've been giving the public about ivermectin. So this is the people spreading misinformation being taken to court for spreading misinformation. Some irony there. Here it is anyway. It's about 10 minutes, what, 8 minutes. When YouTube decides it wants to play a ball. And obviously this was fine just before I went live, but now it doesn't want to play a ball. That's despite a premium subscription. So I don't know what's going on. My Wi-Fi is fine now. So this has got to be coming from YouTube. There's got to be something on the other end. Let's move swiftly on. Right, one more try. So if you think about it, YouTube doesn't need to censor anything. It just needs to stop it from playing. They don't need to actually censor anything. They can just censor it by not allowing it to play or slowing it down to the point that people click away. I think that's probably what they're doing. Anyway, let's move on to Liz Truss. This is a piece from Channel 4 News last night about cabinet squabbling and backbench revolts. Let's see if this plays. Yeah, it's weird. So I'm using the Edge browser, so I couldn't be using anything more compatible with Windows 11 than the Edge browser. And yet YouTube... So the internet is slow. It's slower than it was in the 1990s. In the mid-1990s, I used to wait and watch an hourglass. And now I'm watching a little circle go around in circles. So there's no difference, really. Apart from I'm waiting for a video, not text. That's the only real difference. But there was more information in the text than there is in most of these videos. So this isn't going to play either. Wonderful. We're having a good day with technology, aren't we? I would normally put this down to Mercury retrograde, but it isn't retrograde anymore. Let's try one more time and then I'll give up. This one looks a bit more promising. It's only 2 minutes. No, if playback doesn't begin shortly, try restarting your device. So that's 3 videos in a row. Something's going on, and I don't know what it is. But I will find out.
It is rare that a Chancellor and Prime Minister are so closely aligned. Long-time friends, firm political allies. But Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng's bold plan for the economy has sent the markets into shock. And Conservatives, past and present, are angry.
This is a disastrous start for the new government, unfortunately, when I was personally hoping that they'd now do well and start dealing with the huge number of big crises that they've got. Worst possible start for a new Prime Minister, new Chancellor, to have plunged us with a budget into a financial crisis.
And with the Tory conference around the corner,
we're clearly in a very serious situation.
There's disquiet among current MPs too.
I think it's very, very risky. I think it's a massive challenge. If you were looking for a path through it all, and all of that adding up to something that convinces the markets that this government is acting in a fiscally responsible manner and has a credible plan. And at the moment, there are question marks over all of that.
And are you going to be going to the party conference?
I'm not, but don't read into that anything around what happened on Friday, because it was a decision I took some time ago.
Mel Stride isn't the only name to miss a Tory party conference. Sajid Javid, Rishi Sunak and David Davis have all confirmed they won't be going. Whatever their reason, it sends a clear message. But what's most striking is the mood among Tory MPs behind the scenes. Here's a sample of some of the messages I've been sent privately. One says, it is utterly humiliating. The Bank of England have had to step in. Another text simply that they're shell-shocked. And a third says, I thought Boris's cabinet was the worst in history. This one might just have beaten it.
As the PM's allies rally.
Why has the Bank of England had to intervene, Mr. Rees-Mogg? Are you in control of the economy, sir?
The Chancellor has underlined the government's commitment to fiscal discipline, and there are some still convinced he should hold his nerve.
My message today is that the government are right to see the main threat for the year ahead as recession, not inflation, because the good news is that all the forecasters say inflation will come down a lot next year, and the sooner the better.
Behind the scenes, they're trying to steady nerves, but Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng haven't been seen in public for days, and many are now wondering if the Chancellor can survive this. Ali Fortescue, Sky News, Westminster.
Well, that was from a week ago or so. Now I'm going to try Trial Site News again, because that's the one I actually wanted to play.
So, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons filed its motion and amicus brief Thursday evening with the Federal District Court in Galveston, urging it to allow the lawsuit to proceed against the FDA for its misleading statements against ivermectin. In Apter versus HHS, a group of physicians sued to hold the Food and Drug Administration, a federal agency within the Department of Health and Human Services, accountable for its interference with physicians' ability to treat COVID-19. Branded as a politically conservative organization, mainstream media during the pandemic has alleged that this physician organization, the AAPS, has promoted conspiracy theories. Of course, one of the topics of contention is ivermectin itself, which has become a highly politicized drug, whether it works or not in treating the pandemic virus. Prior to the pandemic, for example, here in the US, physicians had the right to prescribe off-label regimens if they disclosed the risks to their patients. However, in the age of the pandemic hysteria, and along with marching orders from the government to mandate mass vaccination programs, this traditional physician rights seems to be thrown out the window. You see, since the era of the COVID-19 pandemic, doctors were no longer free to just work with patients based on what they assessed was best for them. With a major overreach of the federal government and corresponding umbrella licensing board associations, such as the Federation of State Medical Boards, the federal government has inserted itself, carefully, not directly, into the affairs of doctors during the pandemic. Now, in this episode of Trial Site News, we won't be focusing on the arguments for or against the use of the drug in relation to the pandemic virus. That's not the point of this video. After all, during the pandemic, We here at Trial Site News have long been chronicling many material studies and significant real-world use on its fight against the virus. For example, the Uttar Pradesh Public Health Initiative is one that this media, Trial Site News, tracked closely during the spring of 2021 and was most certainly noteworthy. Even the World Health Organization covered and praised its efforts. However, the WHO has since made it clear that while dozens of mostly low and middle income countries, or LMICs, have authorized the use of ivermectin during at least some part of the pandemic, and with 92 human studies involving ivermectin, again, mostly in low to middle income countries, that appear to show some evidence that the drug may in fact help against SARS-CoV-2, the World Health Organization disagrees. And not just them, but along with many other apex regulators, research institutes, and medical establishments in first world countries. They are questioning these studies with positive results. For example, they're saying that perhaps many of these 92 studies were badly designed. That's an example. And they also focus on a few high-profile studies with no efficacious results. For example, you have the Together trial that showed no positive results from ivermectin, COVID out, Lopez Medina, and Active 6. The WHO, as of its most recent update on the matter, has stated that the, quote, current evidence on the use of ivermectin is to treat COVID-19 patients is inconclusive. Until more data is available, the WHO recommends that the drug only be used within clinical trials. In any case, moving forward, there has been an ever-increasing pressure for doctors to not even consider the drug for use against the virus, even going so far as threatening doctors with losing their license for discussing the drug, since it can fall under the misinformation category. This, of course, is just another form of censorship. An example of this would be the FDA, which most certainly crossed the line when elements within the agency went on a campaign to classify the drug as animal, even though it's human and animal. And they went to war against ivermectin and its use not long after we here at Trial Site News reported that prescriptions went from 3,000 per week prior to the pandemic to nearly 90,000 per week here in the USA during one point in 2021. It is also worth noting that the FDA secures about 40% of its budget from pharma fees, and there have been accusations that suggest that Merck, Pfizer, and other commercial sponsors have sought to keep the lucrative SARS-CoV-2 antiviral market for themselves. There's too much money at stake. For example, the new Pfizer drug Paxlovid, according to estimates, will bring in somewhere between $22 and $24 billion in 2022 alone. Imagine that. A new antiviral drug just in time to make billions of dollars. Nothing to see here. Now let's go back to the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. In this recently announced amicus brief to the court, the conservative group is claiming that the defendant FDA has improperly exploited misunderstandings about the legality and prevalence of off-label uses of medication in order to mislead courts, state medical boards, and the public into thinking that there is anything improper about off-label prescribing. They went on to say that not only is off-label prescribing fully proper, legal, and commonplace, but it is absolutely necessary in order to give effective care to patients. And yet, the accusation goes, the FDA published multiple statements and sent letters to influential organizations to falsely disparage ivermectin, implying that it was not approved for treating COVID-19. Many, including courts and state medical boards, were misled, this according to the accusation, by the FDA into thinking that its lack of approval for this treatment meant that ivermectin should not be used to treat COVID-19. Improper and immoral interference in their arguments to the court, the AAPS has said that it has never been proper for the FDA to interfere with that essential part of the practice of medicine, and the FDA knows it, and that, quote, the FDA insisted and continues to insist on interfering with the prescription of this safe medication by physicians in treating COVID-19. The AAPS General Counsel Andrew Schlafly pointed out to the court that the FDA has engaged in a campaign of interference with the proper use by physicians of ivermectin, which has long been approved as fully safe for human use. He pointed out to the court that once the FDA approves a medication as safe, then physicians have full authority to prescribe it to treat any illness, even on such as a novel virus like COVID-19. Now, of course, it remains to be seen what happens next in this ongoing saga. And of course, we here at Trial Site News will continue to cover this instance, both here and, of course, on TrialSiteNews.com, where you can find constant updates on this, the pandemic, and new and upcoming treatments and drugs from around the world. And that, my friends, will bring our episode to a close once more. From Trial Site News, I am Adrian, and I will see you all next time.
All right, that's the Trial Site News take on this lawsuit that's coming up. I'm going to look for something else on medical lawsuits, I think, and see if anything else shows up.
Welcome to another episode of Trial Site News. Today we're going to be talking about the Pfizer vaccine lawsuit case, which is involving the COVID-19 vaccine. And what is Pfizer's defense strategy here? Well, that the contract status offers them immunity. What? So we're going to be talking about what is happening here. And so, from Trial Site News, I am Adrian, and our episode is starting right now. So, Brooke Jackson is suing Pfizer under the False Claims Act. Ms. Jackson claims that while developing the vaccine for the coronavirus, Pfizer cut corners in their clinical trials, wasting taxpayer dollars, violating federal regulations, and possibly endangering Americans' health. Ms. Jackson claims that in the, quote, race to secure billions in federal funding and become the first to market, the defendants, Pfizer, deliberately withheld crucial information from the United States that calls the safety and efficacy of their vaccine into question. Ms. Jackson also went on to say that the defendants concealed violations of both their clinical trial protocol and federal regulations, including falsification of clinical trial documents. Due to the defendant's scheme, millions of Americans have received a misbranded vaccination, which is potentially not as effective as represented. The vaccine's U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorization resulted from a deeply flawed clinical trial that violated FDA regulations. The defendants have profited from the COVID-19 pandemic at the expense of the United States and its citizens by abusing the scientific process. Unquote. Now, Pfizer has proposed in their defense, in the lawsuit charging them with vaccine study fraud, that there cannot be any legal culpability associated with the charged violations with certifications to the federal government as part of a contract in response to the COVID-19 vaccine. Why? Well, as mentioned at the top of the program, Pfizer is claiming that the federal contract status offers them immunity from such claims. The pharmaceutical company is seeking to dismiss the lawsuit brought on by the whistleblower Brooke Jackson under this premise. Now, who exactly is Ms. Jackson? Let's take a look at her for a minute. Well, she worked for a contract research organization called Ventavia Research Group on the pivotal Phase 3 Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine study. She alleges that she witnessed many critical, compliance-violating anomalies needing immediate attention. She emailed the complaint concerning alleged violations of good clinical practices, as well as various compliance frameworks and laws, to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration back in September of 2020. However, the executive branch agency in charge of enforcement of alleged violations simply opted to not open an investigation into the matter. And so the study continued, and Pfizer didn't make any adjustments working with Ventavia. However, the CRO did fire Ms. Jackson shortly thereafter, alleging involvement with fraudulent manipulation of data and other allegations. Now, as we here at Trial Site News have reported, Jackson opted to take legal action here, filing a lawsuit in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Texas, Beaumont Division, alleging a violation of the False Claims Act. The plaintiff sought action for the violation of federal laws and associated compliance standards, such as good clinical practice. Now, it is also worth noting that the U.S. Department of Justice opted to pass on any involvement. And during the case, Ms. Jackson violated a gag order and lost her attorneys in the process. However, she was picked up by attorney Robert Barnes shortly thereafter. Pfizer argues that thanks to a procurement clause known as the Other Transaction Authority, or OTA, associated with Department of Defense-related contracts, for example, the pharmaceutical company isn't liable for the standard federal procurement rules governing such contracts. So that raises the question then, does Pfizer get a pass from the rule of law for violating laws and rules as alleged by the plaintiff and her attorney? Well, according to Jackson's attorney, this case could be the biggest False Claims Act whistleblower case in U.S. history. So now let's take a step back and look at some of the background here. Back in November of 2021, we here at TrialSite News reported that the prominent medical journal, the BMJ, reported on the Jackson situation with Ventavia and Pfizer. And in what is becoming more and more commonplace in the era of social media censorship, which we here at TrialSite News have experienced ourselves numerous times on multiple social platforms, the BMJ, one of the most prominent medical journals in the world, was themselves censored by Facebook fact checkers. Why? Well, because they reported on the allegations of fraud, including the prospect of data manipulation associated with the COVID-19 vaccine trials. Now, to their credit, the BMJ fired back at the social media giant with a message to Facebook saying, "Stop censoring us and shut down your incompetent fact checkers." Meanwhile, while all of this is going on, we also followed the lawsuit to compel disclosure of research and development and regulatory documentation associated with the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. It was initiated by a Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, request by the Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency, a nonprofit which sued after rejection thanks to the support of attorney Aaron Seary of the law firm Seary Glimstad. Now, at one point during the dispute to compel document disclosure, the FDA proposed holding the documentation for an outrageous 75-year period, releasing only 500 pages per month, which is beyond infuriating for those who want to see the data. If the FDA had gotten its way, it would mean that the documents wouldn't have been fully viewable until 2096. But thankfully, back in early January, United States District Judge Mark Pittman ordered the release of the documents in batches of 55,000 pages per month over the next several months. And what follows is perhaps unsurprising, as reported by Sonia Elijah here on TrialSite News. The release of artifacts from the trove of Pfizer documentation revealed a series of problems with reported errors and anomalies. So now let's go back to the Brooks lawsuit. Well, as mentioned at the top of this program, Pfizer has made a move to strike down the lawsuit, filing a motion to dismiss, declaring that it cannot be at fault for misrepresentation, misuse, and other claims associated with the BNT162b2 clinical trials due to its accord with the U.S. government itself. They claim that this permitted them to bypass guidelines as well as Health and Human Services administrative regulations associated with standard government contracts. So is there any merit to this? Well, according to the Epoch Times, they recently reported on Pfizer's move to dismiss the case, declaring that the regulations raised as standards during the lawsuit simply don't apply to them. The deal Pfizer inked with the U.S. Department of Defense falls under the OTA, or Other Transaction Authority, enabling those contractors to evade many of the normal laws, rules, and policies that apply to government contracts. According to the government research organization, OTAs include, quote, procurement instruments other than contracts, grants, or cooperative agreements enabling flexible business arrangements to acquire research and development to support technology advancement or to quickly develop a prototype. Many laws and regulations governing federal contracts do not apply to OTs, i.e. Federal Acquisition Regulation and the Competition and Contracting Act. However, the Procurement Integrity Act applies, and competitive practices are applicable. OTs may be protested to the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, and GAO has limited jurisdiction to review OT decisions. Now, in court, the defendant, Pfizer declared that the demand that they comply with federal acquisition was simply, quote, wrong. So what does Jackson's attorney, Robert Barnes, have to say about all of this? Well, he said in an interview that, quote, what is fascinating is that Pfizer has moved to dismiss the case, and their ground to dismiss, as they repeated in the scheduling conference we had this week, is that it doesn't matter if they submitted fraudulent certifications to the government. It doesn't matter if they submitted false statements under penalty of perjury to the government. It doesn't matter if they lied about the safety and efficacy of the drugs, because the government was in on this with them. The government knew what was going on, and the government is going to give them a check anyway. So is it really fraud if the government is a conspirator? That is the essential Pfizer defense so far. Now, in what is considered a victory for the plaintiff, Barnes reported that the judge has declared the plaintiff is entitled to discovery in relation to the motion to dismiss. Attorney Barnes shared in his interview, posted online, that Pfizer went, quote, ballistic, because the plaintiffs, according to the judge, have rights to discovery in a timely and material way. And so it would seem that Attorney Barnes, in suggesting that Ms. Brooks' case could be the biggest whistleblower false claims act in history, could be onto something. But no matter how you look at the situation, it is deeply disturbing and troubling that this has managed to evade the public eye for so long. This probably has a lot to do, though, with the fact that social media has been in on all of this in keeping information suppressed with the whole Trusted News initiative. In any case, though, we of course will be keeping an eye on the story as it continues to develop both on TrialSiteNews.com and here on the YouTube channel. And that, my friends, will bring our episode to a close once more. As always, thank you so much for joining me on the program today.
All right, so that's... I don't know how long ago that went up, but I shall find out. June. So the lawsuit must have been happening from June onwards, because that's when they reported it. 16th of June, that video was from. So, South Oz, you're welcome to jump on and have a chat if you want to. And Coco, you're the same. I'm being fairly casual about the show, so it's all good. How are you doing, man? You're okay?
Hi, Den. Can you hear me okay, mate?
I can hear you fine.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'm doing all right, man. Sorry, I haven't picked up on anything that you're talking about. Have you had any main topic or subject of the broadcast today?
It's just about lawsuits. Basically, the first one I played was an organization in Texas that's taken the FDA to court for spreading misinformation about ivermectin, and that one was a Pfizer whistleblower who's taken somebody to court, Pfizer to court, for defamation and whatever. There's something going on. Pfizer was spreading information about her that wasn't correct, so she's taken them to court for breach of contract and all sorts of other things. So that's really I picked up on that as I went on air, so I didn't actually have a plan. I just picked up on it, and that's what turned out to be. So it's one of those shows where you do it 2 minutes before you're due to go on, when you decide to do it.
I just had a bit of a nanny nap, and I just got up, and I seen you're on. So, yeah, I just come in and seen what you're up to. Yeah, I don't know about, especially like character defamation, man. That can be a big thing and can cripple someone, you know, especially in the independent media and stuff like that. You know, you only need a few people to share some, you know, bad vibes and stuff. And, it can change someone, definitely. Social media is a bad thing for that.
Very much so. Very much so, man. This woman runs trials for pharmaceutical companies, but she's the whistleblower that went to the British Medical Association. So she went to the British Medical Journal, the BMJ. So she's put herself on the line, basically. She can't afford to not work. It's a totally specialist area, and she's being slagged off by Pfizer. So she's going to get damaged. I would imagine she'll get damages because she's lost out on income that she would otherwise have.
Well, Pfizer's a good one to go after if you want some bit of extra pocket in, you know, a bit of extra money in your pocket, because
they're not short of money at the moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd rather go and sue get defamation league sort of things from Pfizer than, you know, your local pet shop or something. So her case is going to be good if it works out anyway.
Yeah, and apparently Robert Barnes is representing her, so she's got a good guy in her corner as well.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him. Isn't that one of his main talents in defamation or something like that? I have heard of his name before.
I don't know exactly what he specializes in, but he's known to be a lawyer that'll take on cases that other people won't take on, so... He's prepared to stick his...
That's what I meant, yeah. More of an advocate for the people, isn't he? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, he pops up on Gonzalo Lira's channel on a regular basis and on the Duran on a fairly regular basis as well.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So he's around, and I think he's a good man to have in your corner, I think. He doesn't seem to say too many... he says the odd thing that isn't backed up by evidence, but he's fairly careful about what he says. So you can tell he's a lawyer by the way he speaks.
I reckon he was the one, if I remember rightly, he virtually threw out his paycheck just for the sake of helping someone. He was that sort of a character, if that's the same person I'm thinking of.
That's possible. That's possible. There's a lot of people do pro bono work. Yeah. Lawyers in particular do pro bono work and just don't talk about it, because it's one of those things. If you've got a high paying client on your left hand, you can do pro bono, but if you don't have the high paying client, you can't do the free stuff.
Yeah, that's
how they balance it, really. Yeah. How are you doing? You're all right. I've seen you online, but I haven't really been in to have a chat for a while.
Yeah, I'm doing well. South Australia's doing well, and I'm doing well. And just still podcasting away, still doing my shows. I've pumped out, stuff every now and then. And I'm still pretty regular on the old Podbeam. I don't venture out too much apart from that. But I'm still out there, man. Still going strong. And it's all a passion, man. Not making a cent.
No, I know the feeling.
But it's the passion, man. It's to get something out, and it's good stuff.
Yeah, I think the reward comes from people signing up, really, doesn't it? If you're getting subscribers, that's a reward as much as money is, and eventually it might turn into money. You never know.
Yeah, well, most of my life I felt like I was just talking to a wall, so it doesn't really make much difference.
No, I know the feeling. I know the feeling well.
I don't really care. It's just it's just something I like to do. So, to make money out of it would be even better. That's for bloody sure.
I'm still trying to figure that one out. There's no real business model on Podbean, though, that's clear. After a year and 3 months of looking at it and working through it, there is no business model here.
No, Podbean is not for that. I've heard of people venturing off onto TikTok
and that, and they've made. I'm getting an echo.
Yeah, I don't think I can do TikTok videos. I did have a look at them, and they're not my style of video. It's like 30 seconds of jumping around, making a prat of yourself is what's going to get views, isn't it? So that's not really what I do. Yeah, I don't think anybody would want to see my tits, quite honestly. Anyway, it's just... There's nothing to see, so there's no real reason for anybody to want to. Anyway, it's a different style of content, and it's not really my thing. YouTube, I'm still looking at. There might be a way to do something on YouTube, but with 11 subscribers, I think I'm a long way away from that. So I'm not, I've got as many subscribers on BitChute now as I have had on YouTube for the last year and a half. And I've only just I've literally started posting videos on BitChute about a month ago. And the subscribers are coming on there. That's the only one where I'm getting subscribers really at the moment. And Podbean, they're coming. But so those are the two places I'm going to concentrate on between now and Christmas.
I listened to a couple of shows like Tinfoil Hat and My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. And they're just under sort of like a Joe Rogan sort of platform. And they seem to talk about Rockfin. Have you ever heard much about Rockfin?
Yeah, Rockfin's another video platform. I've got the app on my phone because there was one guy, Slow News Day, is the show that I used to watch on Rockfin. But I think Whitney Webb does her show on Rockfin as well.
It seems so popular up there in the higher up. Like these are people in America mainly that are, like I said, just under a sort of a Joe Rogan sort of platform. That they'd be up there if they were, but they rub shoulders sort of with him. They're some of them are comedians and things like that. And
yeah.
Rockfin. I've never looked into it.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of place where you would need some kind of studio, you need some kind of higher production values to be on Rockfin. I think they've got some criteria that you need to fulfill for sound and video quality or whatever.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
So it's a bit above my production level at the moment. There might be time in a couple of years for me to get a couple of decent cameras and set up a studio, but at the moment I'm in the kitchen and this is my studio, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm working with a few fellas. We've got the Laguna North media company that's sort of eventuating, so I'm sort of hooked up with them at the moment, trying to help, you know, establish a community there. So that's a little bit exciting, you know, like if it goes off and the gentleman behind it, Russ, he's really put some, you know, time and money behind it, so I'm willing to support them. It's only time for me at the moment, and if something eventuates, yeah, great, you know, but I just like the crew, and so I'm that's my main venture at the moment is
yes, it's just having good people around you is an important thing, man, particularly now. It's the quality of the people you've got around you that'll keep you sane.
And we've got a lot of good brains and like web creators and stuff like that and marketings, and I'm finding more and more that it's the marketing issue, definitely. That's what it's all about. You just got to get your name out and market it. And so I'm joining on board with these guys and see how it goes. And I'm willing to go for the journey with them. And like I said, it's costing me nothing apart from time. And it should be good. It's a good adventure anyway. I feel positive about it.
But, good, man.
Yeah. So, and then we can bring people along. We're going to be able to bring people along, like say for yourself once we get established on that. And freedom and stuff like that. We can be able to incorporate you sort of guys into it if the journey's going well enough. But at the moment, there's no income, so it's just
That's it. Somebody's got to break through and then bring everybody else through with them. That's the key thing, isn't it? And I'm rebranding a little bit. I'm doing this. This is Technocratic Tyranny News now. So I've got Technocratic Tyranny Blues, which is the music show. Then I've rebranded Free Association as Technocratic Tyranny News, just to keep the alliteration going and make it easy to remember. But I don't know whether it'll work or not, but it's got more of a vibe to it. The music show's bringing subscribers in, so I'm happy with that. That's good enough for me.
Are you going to be on for much longer? Because Freedom's saying on the side, he might be in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'll hang around. I don't have anything else to do, so I'll hang around for a while if you want to have a I'll play another couple of clips and we'll just see if he comes in.
Can I ask you something, Dennis, that I'm not really about music, that I'm not savvy on? Maybe you might have a bit of information about it.
Yeah, feel free.
Like, I've been into just about, I was just talking to Lorenz earlier, yesterday and today, and it's like, wow, I've been getting into Mozart and, you know, all those sort of aspects. And, like, he's been into jazz and all these sort of things, and I've been mainly into, yeah, like hard rock and everything classical from there, but I've never been a jazz person or a classical where it comes to Bach, Mozart and all that. Do you know much about Bach and the Mozart, like any history or anything like that about their music?
No, well, it's a long time ago. I used to buy a thing, a magazine about classical music, but it's so long ago. I was about 15 at the time. I got this big pile of magazines in the second-hand shop that were the, like, about classical composers. So I read some of that, but it's 40 years ago, so don't ask me to remember any of it. The only thing that's worth researching is the Mozart effect. Do you know about the Mozart effect?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was on about. I was talking to Lorenz yesterday about it, the Mozart effect, and he said, oh, actually, Bart is actually earlier. And I didn't know that. And I have heard I think they call it the World's Cathedral. Have you heard of that?
I don't know that, but cathedrals are astonishing. If you can get yourself out. I used to go to string quartets on a lunchtime. If you've got any churches around that are doing music on a lunchtime, it's well worth getting along to. Just every now and again, I mean, not as a major thing, but I used to work in the City of London at one point. I was on the Stock Exchange, I think, which is one of the first jobs I did when I moved to London. And then the churches in the City of London are all subsidised by the corporation, and they put on concerts at lunchtime because you've got all these stockbrokers and bankers and insurance people who need something to do. So they try and keep them away from the bars and in the churches with music to make them more productive, presumably, so they get their return on investment that way. But I used to go to string quartets, and they're just phenomenal. Some of them are just phenomenal.
Yeah, amazing.
Got some musicianship?
Yeah, I fully believe it takes you to another level. There's definitely a dimensional change in these certain choirs and musics in these places. There is. That's why we get that, I guess, spiritual experience, I think. I'm sure of it. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, because the music's designed for the acoustics of a church, so it's specifically designed to resonate in that style of building, and it's just, like, it's phenomenal. I mean, the concert hall where I am at the moment, the Sage, and the acoustics in there are phenomenal. It's a fairly new building. It went up about 20 years ago, and it's clear, the sight lines are all clean. There's no pillars in the way or anything like that. So it's a different style. But churches, I went to I called in at the cathedral along the, because I live opposite the cathedral, and there's another cathedral further along in the city. And I think I was going to the job centre or somewhere. I called in the cathedral, and I caught the last 10 minutes of a piano recital, and the pianist sounded like John Lord. He was going full on with the Hammond organ or whatever it was he was playing in this cathedral. It was phenomenal, man. And I basically caught the end of the gig, which is the big finale. So that was exactly the right bit for me to catch.
It makes you feel like when you listen to someone like that, it's like, oh, the methamphetamines have just kicked in. It's like,
yeah, it's a It's the way people used to get their dopamine before Facebook, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the way people used to get their dopamine.
Yeah, it's the passion, man. That's what I love about it all. And, I mean, I've been into a lot of heavy metal and stuff like that, and studying, like, semantics or whatever they call it, and all these things about water and all that, and I just... as much as I might like a bit of, you know, heavy metal and stuff, I do know in my soul that it doesn't work. It's not a good thing, because we're made up mostly of water, and if these things are creating those crystalline you know, impressions into our water, well, it's obviously imprinting these sort of
yeah, exactly,
into our whole body. So yeah, the whole thing makes sense. The whole music, everything's about sound. Like, look at the walls of Jericho. That was all sound, you know. Singing songs, everything like that. They broke down the walls of Jericho just from a certain frequency. And I've heard of a recent one, which is very interesting, about sounds that you can have, like, for instance, a fan going in the background, and it can resonate to a desk that is, say, you've got a desk that's, you know, 500 years older, right? And you might get a haunting from that desk, but what it is the actual imprint of the person, or especially chairs, that is resonating back. And that makes a lot of sense in so-called spiritual apparitions and things like that.
Objects carry the memory of where they've been to some extent.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you got a child that's sat there for, you know, 5 years of its life and looking out a window, and you say there's a child that used to sit in that chair, there obviously must be some sort of an imprint. I think even the Bible talks about that, about the rocks crying out and things like that. And, you know, Jesus mentioned another thing about, you know, virtually along those realms. You know, when we hear about haunted, like just a spirit staring at us or just standing there, and maybe I can understand that it is an imprint from a vibration or a level that we're on, like maybe we're on a certain level that we can pick up on these, but they're not necessarily there with us, but they are a vibration of time. That could explain a lot of paranormal, you know, apparitions and mysteries.
I think quite a lot of it as well is telepathy. I used to do mediumship demonstrations at one point, and a lot of that, if it's telepathic, it's not spirit standing there with you. It's you're picking up the thoughts of the person that you're reading about, the person that you're talking about. They're not necessarily standing there next to you or whatever. It's just that's a way of expressing it that makes it real for people. But a lot of it is telepathy, and I think a lot of things are telepathy, contagion, like psychological contagion. What we've been through over the last two and a half years, some of that was telepathy. So I think there's a lot of things.
Telepathy of the person that was in that room, or something like that. Like you say, you're picking up on them, or you're picking still up on them from where they were at that time.
I think there's an element of mass media, but also when there's a level of fear in a community, then it spreads. It spreads subconsciously through the old telepathic thing that we've got is a survival mechanism when we were in tribes or whatever. It's so that you know what the rest of the tribe are doing, so that if anybody sees danger, everybody else gets it, like a flock of birds. That all works on telepathy. And I think we've still got that. I think we've still got that built into our DNA. And but one of the things that it does is if there's a buildup of fear somewhere, it spreads rapidly, because that's necessary for the survival mechanism. But if the fear is not justified, it's still spread. And that's what we've been through over the last 2.5 years or whatever. I think it was a lot of it was psychological contagion, and then your body manifests the symptoms of what you've been told's happening because the media is telling you the symptoms.
Yeah, like a mass psychosis.
Yeah. So it's all about resonance. It's all about, like, people are resonating with the fear, and it's the spread of it, the telepathic spread of it, or the psychological spread of it, depending on what language you want to use, is about the resonance of it as well. So it is about, it's about the sound of it, the frequency of it.
That's right. Wish your mask, where's your mask? Why haven't you done this? Where's your mask? And all that. And and the other psychological thing too is like, if you're not wearing your mask, then you're inconsiderate because you're not trying to save someone else. And that's another psychological mind effery that they put out as well, wasn't it, really?
So yeah, it takes a lot of courage to stand up to that shit, man. So we know the people now who've got courage. That's an important thing to know. And we wouldn't have found out any other way. We wouldn't, about this particular type of courage, we wouldn't have found out any other way. But now that we know the people, we'll all end up working together.
It really opened my eyes to see who was ready to succumb and who wasn't. And the ignorance of people that I thought that wouldn't happen and all that, it really was a, wow. It was like, I couldn't believe some of the people that I knew that went with it, some that didn't, and it was really eye-opener just to see on a level, you know, like, to me, it's like, well, I'm not going to put poison, it was known from the start that it's an experimental injection, just that alone, you know, so for me as a human, I'm thinking, well, why are you that fearful? And they obviously put fear into their minds, but then the ones that didn't fear had to go on a plane trip, so then they had to have a vacation, and then they also had to work on three levels, at least different levels, that were very impactful to society.
Whether you believe it, whether you like it or not, it was definitely a mind effery.
Yeah, it's been a tricky process. It's been a tricky process to go through for everybody, I think. But at least we know now. We know who's prepared to stand up. There's about 30 of us in this town at the moment, standing on the Tyne Bridge on a Friday afternoon with signs. Getting in front of the traffic on a Friday afternoon on the way home, and the response has changed over. I've been doing it for the last 4 months or so, not necessarily every single week, but like 2 weeks out of three, I'll be there. And the response of the traffic has changed dramatically in that time, from being hostile to people now applauding, people. Yeah. Genuinely saying congratulations, keep doing what you're doing, and that wasn't happening 4 months ago. So the shift has been very quick. Now that it's happened, it's been very quick.
I'm waiting for this next two years
when people start just
dropping.
The broader base we've got, the better, because then we can stop it from ever happening again.
That's a big one where people go, oh, you sheep all this and you sheep all that. It's like, no, maybe you're doing things, you know, just because someone's ignorant doesn't mean you're a sheep. You know, they've obviously got their best intention, unless it's the ones that had to do all that work.
I lost my job.
Things have changed, but Some for the better, some not so much. But if we keep, if everybody keeps their eyes open and we talk about it, then we can spot the stuff that's not working and get it shut down quickly or changed quickly.
I mean, I had some meeting the last meeting before I walked out and said, this is it, you know. And she's like, oh, well, I've got my COVID experimental jab. Is it okay to have my flu shot within 2 weeks and stuff like this? Is the talk of the meeting. And I've got this boss that just rolled, you know, standing there saying, well, it's, and you could tell she had no idea. So yeah. Here's this worker just asking for information. And she goes, oh, within 2 weeks, I think you should be okay to have your flu back thing of well. And it's like, oh, holy shit. People are listening now to people that aren't even freaking so-called doctors, not that well, I listen to all that shit. But, you know, your own workplace is dictating to you. It's beyond a joke. It's just freaking, I don't know, man. It might be a culling. It might just be a freaking part of Darwin's evolution, so to speak. You know, it just might be a period of time where you're that fucking dumb, like, well, this is what's going to happen, you know.
That's the way it happens sometimes, I think. At the moment, according to trial, I was listening to somebody, I can't remember who, there was a guy on Dr. Drew last night. That's just shown up on YouTube, so I've shared that with a few people on Facebook. But he was talking about a 20% drop in a 10% drop in the birth rate worldwide. So if you add a 10% drop in the birth rate to a 5% increase in mortality over normal levels, then you're talking about some serious shit going on, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very serious shit going on indeed. And that's why I need the radio. That's why I need the music show, because I would go insane if I was talking about that stuff all day long.
Myself, because it does, man. It takes a lot on you. It's just like, and then the worst thing too is like sometimes you feel like you're pissing in the wind. It's like, oh man, you just want to grab people, so that makes you more angry because it's like, wow, wake up, look at this.
Yeah, you've just got to let go of the results.
Yeah, you got to realize that we're just at different levels, and this is just the way it is, man. You can't change everyone. You can put it out there, and yeah, you got to balance it for sure, because it will, it does. I've been through it myself. Freaking yeah. Breakdowns, man. It's too much info. It just overwhelms you, you know. Especially when you're actually concerned about it. You know, a lot of people do it probably for the adrenaline and, oh, look at this, look at that. But when you're an actual human being that actually, you know, takes these things to heart, and can see your own human societies breaking down, and you can see behind the whole scenes, and you got to step back, man. It's not healthy, that's for sure. You got to look after yourself. That's definitely, I've found that out definitely this last year. You got to step back.
I mean, I do the Tyne Bridge thing that I do on a Friday afternoon. I do it for my mental health. I don't do it to change anybody else's mind. I do it because I have to do something. So it's not about changing anybody's, for other people, they're there to change people's minds and educate people. I just do it because I have to do it. I have to do something.
I never look at anything that I actually do to change people's minds, but it's just shakes people up, you know what I mean? Like, it's a different sort of thing. It's like, oh man, here I am, I want to change you to this, or to make you, you know, believe what I believe. But it's just like, look at this, look at that, look at that, and hopefully that will come to some sort of, you know, at least on some sort of path where I'm at. That's the way I sort of look at life, and even podcasting. It's like, wow, okay. Oh, you're an idiot because you don't know what I'm forgetting. No, it just, anyway, that doesn't work anyway. It's like when you wake someone up, isn't it? You know, you can't just shake them in the morning and just go, this is how it is. You've got to be tactful at least.
You've got to wait for people to come around themselves and then encourage them a little bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm so unjudgmental now. It's just like, well, man, you've done your thing. Like, what would I say to someone? Do you know what you've done by having this jab? And it's like, that's not very becoming, and that's freaking sick, because if I knew, if I'd had it, I'd feel sick to the gut, you know. Positive affirmations is the most important thing, and working on things, I think, is a very crucial thing to help each other, you know. All right, I was a dick. All right, I've done that. But you don't have to, you know, bring someone down with names and shit, you know. We all make mistakes in life. There's no need for that crap. You know, and it's not being politically correct or anything. It's just being a human. You know, there's someone that damn well cares.
So, yeah, I mean, if you look at the process that went on in January in Britain was when the health service workers were being told that they were going to have the jab or they would lose their job. Mm-hmm. So those are the people that made the big difference in January, because they just refused. There was 10% of the health service workers, at least 10%, probably more like 20%, who just refused. And they organized. They had matching sweatshirts. They had merchandise. They had a marketing campaign to get the message out. They were branding themselves as the NHS 100K, 100,000. And that's what made it was the marketing that made the difference, because it got the message out to people that wouldn't otherwise get it.
And they made unity. Yeah, they had a certain unity, whether it's a shirt or a badge or something. It was something of unity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
We didn't have that here. We lost our jobs here, our healthcare workers, because we didn't have that sort of formation, or people to help us. We just had to just drop. Because it happened so quick. It was just like you're sort of shaking your head, and it's like, well, I can't go to work tomorrow now because you want me to have, you know, a jab and or this and that. And I mean, what about people that we talk about? This is the weird thing about it too, is that we talk about all our healthcare workers. I had to go to jobs and stuff like that, and I just didn't wear a mask before I had to actually leave, just as it was starting. And they're like, oh, haven't you got a mask or this and that? And it's like, well, I'm cleaning your house or I'm taking you out and I'm doing this and that. And then it got to the point that people had to wear masks, just taking them shopping and all this stuff. And it's like, common sense would tell you, you're losing about 33% of your oxygen for a start. So that isn't very good for, personal care for yourself, let alone, you know, safety of your clients. So actually, you're breaching occupational health and safety by driving around with these people. But these are little nuggets of common sense that never mattered to anyone, because the fear just overrode them. Oh, God, you could pass this on, or, oh, we could do this and that. And it's just like, yeah, mass psychosis for sure.
Yeah, and you can still see the people who are caught up in it, because they're still wearing masks.
Yeah, they're still doing it. Yep, still going. Man, it's
not that many now. It's maybe 10%, 5% of people. But there's still people who are doing it.
Yeah, I went to the little town today, and I'm like, bloody hell, there's a couple of people still running around with them. And it's like, it was raining, windy, a virus. And they're on their own. They're like standing in the streets on their own. There's no one around them completely. Or then they're in their cars. It's just like, are you really, really that screwed up in the head? Yeah. Look, I went through a lot of bloody problems with family and stuff like that. I think I only know Probably one family offhand that didn't go down the path. So that says a lot, man. One out of all my family pretty much that I know and that I think that probably did. That's, whoa. And that person, I was struggling for them to not go down this path at all. So I could imagine there was a lot of people that succumbed to this, you know. This person was struggling. I said, don't, please, just don't do it. And luckily, she come close, but she held off, and then within months, everything's back to normal. Her partner was saying, I can't go here and I can't go there if I don't have it. And it's like, hold out, and sure enough now, we can all go everywhere. And I said, you watch. I said, there'll be booster shots coming. And over here in Australia, we've got a bloody industry made up. It's quite a big thing to make up more of them. So they ain't stopped, man. I think this might be the calm, big calm before a bigger storm. People think we're seeing shit between the last 2 years. I seriously do think that there is something bigger that they've got planned, man. I really do. They wouldn't put us through all this. This was a psychological analysis of the human, you know, species, so-called race. And that was a test run, man. As bad as that looks, I think something worse is coming between now and 2030. I really do. I think they've got some big plans, man. I don't think it's over. As sad as that sounds, I don't think it's over.
No, I don't either. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's coming down the track, but I know that now I've found my voice and my courage. It's not gonna come anywhere near me. Like, I might not be able to change the world, but I can make sure the world doesn't come anywhere near me if it changes in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you gotta be that sort of light as well, haven't you? Someone's gotta do it, no matter how hard it looks and feels. People have gotta stand out, and we'll stand out. We're already standing out now. When we tell people, you know, they're gonna tell you to take another jab. They're gonna tell you this. People thought now, even people now that have taken the first and second, they're over it. They're like, no, I'm not taking fucking 4, 5, 6. They're starting to at least see it. That's the good thing about it. It's unfortunate they've got to that point, but at least they're seeing it, you know.
Yeah, that's it. We're at jab number 4 now, and I don't think there's a lot of people going for boosters anymore. It's tricky, though, because anybody who's worked in the NHS is just going to trust the NHS so much. My mother and my stepdad, they're bought in hook, line, and sinker. Did you just fall over? Something just happened over there. I don't know what.
Sorry about
that. Yeah, Matt, you're right, man.
I'm going to have to pause myself and go sort this dog out for a sec.
Yeah, no problem. I think I'm going to close the room down, man, because I'm standing in the kitchen and I need to start wandering about. So I think I'm going to close it down. But thanks for coming in, and I shall keep an eye out. And if you open a room, I'll jump in. But I want to do it with a cup of coffee in my hand from a cafe. So I need to change.
Sorry, man, I've got a barking dog here in the background. Well, Freedom's going to come on soon, so I might wait till Lorenz comes in. He's going to start a broadcast. So if
right, I'll jump on there. Then I'll take my phone with me and keep an eye on it, and I'll jump in.
Okay, Jen. All right, mate. All right. Well, yeah. Sorry,
all right.
Back around here. Yeah, I'll good.
No, you're fine. Don't worry.
All right, mate.
All right, take care. I'll see you next time. And thanks for coming in, Coco.